Warning, the following podcast contains adult language and childish comedy. Listener discretion is advised. And now, please adjust your headphone volume to an unreasonable level and enjoy the most dynamic and electrifyingly entertaining podcast ever to conquer cyberspace.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the most powerful podcast ever created, the Amazing Pop Culture Podcast, starring Dags and Rez. Today, we have a powerful episode. I'm excited. Put your hands together and put your legs together for DJ Micah Rez. And on the horn is Johnny Rage.
Hello, Dags. Hello, Johnny Rage. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Like I said earlier, the ensemble is back. So three of the biggest names and all of the podcast world back together doing what we do best.
You ain't lying, Johnny Rage. We are the most powerful podcast ever created, the Amazing Pop Culture Podcast. Now, before we get into it, make sure you follow us on all social media, on Twitter, formerly known as X, or is it Micah DJ Rez X, formerly known as Twitter?
Yep.
At Amazing Pop Pod. Check out our YouTube channel. Like us on Facebook and all that jazz. And Micah DJ Rez's is at Mike Rez Radio. Now let's get into it. We all saw a movie, Godzilla Minus One. I heard DJ Rez tell us a little bit about that movie and we'll get into it.
Godzilla Minus One is just a badass monster movie that gives you a lot of nostalgia if you've seen any of the original Toho Godzillas. This will give you 1954 vibes, monster movie. Models of trains being crushed, that kind of stuff. Models of cities being destroyed. That's what it'll remind you of, because that's what's happening in this movie.
Start us off. How does it happen? What's going on? What's the scene? Paint a picture for us, Micah DJ Rez.
Well, this is Japan, specifically Tokyo, after World War II. We follow a failed, or you can't really say failed, but I guess you could, depending on who you are, kamikaze pilot. Who decides that he does not want to follow through on the kamikaze part of being a kamikaze pilot, finds himself on an island that specifically helps kamikaze pilots repair their planes when they are damaged so they can get back in the air to crash once again. So he stays there. They kind of find out that maybe he's chickened out, and they kind of shame him a little bit, and then we see Godzilla for the first time, kind of a mini Godzilla, not as big as you would be expecting. And as we find out later on, not too long after that scene is over, that he is growing exponentially because of more nuclear tests in Bikini Bottom.
So we see the giant Godzilla.
Yes, the Godzilla you've grown to love.
That we know and love.
That's right.
And tragedy ensues. Johnny Rage, let's get into it. What are your thoughts on this movie?
Well, a quick question to Rez. Who lives in a pineapple under the sea? That's a question that I wanted to...
Oh, well, that's definitely SpongeBob Dag's pants.
Okay, that's a different topic.
True. Yep.
You know, I was kind of collecting my thoughts as I was listening to that brilliant recap.
Thank you.
Now, I'm missing something. I grew up on Godzilla, never really paid that close attention, but I always thought his inception had to do with some morphed being due to the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima in Japan. But Godzilla appears in this version before. Where did he come from? Wasn't he originally because of an atomic bomb? The nuclear fallout created this morphed monster. Did I miss the plane from 1945 on, or am I wrong with this, people? Or
well, I think what happened is, if you don't watch Oppenheimer, you don't actually see the origin story of Godzilla, as the nuclear test from Oppenheimer explained that's where Godzilla came from.
Yes, okay. You have to sit through 3 hours of Oppenheimer smoking cigarettes, and then you get into the origin of Godzilla. No, but you're so true, Johnny Rage. Did you know there's been over 30 Godzilla movies?
Oh, I heard more than that at one time. I mean, and they were pumping them out in Japan. I thought I read somewhere over like 800 at one point in time. But is that the America's version of Godzilla version?
That or is that the mixture.
Okay.
Over 30. Did you want a better origin or?
Well, most movies always have the pending monster or villain that they don't display it immediately. They came right out of the chutes and they exposed Godzilla. Part of me liked that, and part of me was like, oh, well, I already saw him. The thrill's kind of over. And, but it shocked me because this was 1940-something during World War II, which I love that era in general. But I thought, wait a minute, Godzilla didn't happen until after that because it was from all the atomic bombs that he morphed into this monstrous thing. So I was kind of thrown a little bit. I guess maybe my historical origin of Godzilla is wrong, and I have to get my team of experts on this, but I do know that as the movie progressed, it did show that he had this nuclear capability. He kind of revved himself up and was able to, you know, shoot rays of nuclear energy toward people. But whether his origins, where they come from or not, I really enjoyed the film. It was one of the films that had very high rankings from many people, but you always think those are just generic people, that it's friends of friends, you know, kind of like when you go for that job interview and you want a reference, you always find five people who say nothing but good things about you. That's the same with Godzilla. Even Rotten Tomatoes, though, gave it 100. And I thought, okay, well, this has a lot to live up to because everybody says it's so good. And I'm a huge Godzilla fan, so it doesn't take much for me to enjoy a movie like that. But it really hit on all cylinders for me because it took me back, the nostalgia in there. It just reeked of nostalgia. How many times, Dags, you and I saw it together, and one of the funniest things you said was, why is it when Godzilla is terrorizing a city, people are on the train going to work as if nothing's happening? You know? Well, there is a Godzilla, but I'm going to head over to work. I mean, say, honey, I'll be back by 5.
Calling sick to work, hungover, and this...
Oh, that was
well, it wasn't only her. There was numerous people, and he's just stomping through the town, you know. Well, we might as well go to work at this point in time, but it's so typical of the Godzilla. They rolled out all, and they had the original soundtrack.
Oh, yes.
I love that Godzilla music. Call. And that just added to it right there. And they rolled out all the vintage stuff that we saw as kids when they would bring the tanks out. The army would try their best. But, of course, they would bombard Godzilla, but it would have zero effect. Or they'd be this big cloud, and they thought they got him. And then, of course, the cloud would dissipate, and then he would just roar, and thunder and lightning would come out in terms of, Godzilla would come out like thunder and lightning. But for me, like I said, it just brought me back to the era. Remember, I mean, the old Godzilla, the guy was in like a Godzilla suit and he would just kind of walk around a town, like Dank, Rez, you said earlier, just kind of doing his destruction that he does. The Godzillas that we had here in the past that were the American version, Dank, I'm going to steal your line, sepia tones or whatever you always, it's always at night because they want to use the cover of darkness to cover up the imperfections of the monster that they created. They didn't do that in this movie. They brought him out in broad daylight. I thought the visual effects were phenomenal. And you got to see Godzilla marching through town, not with smoke, not with darkness. It was broad daylight, and you got to see him, the people running. And I just thought, I very rarely do I ever want to go to a movie twice. That one, it wouldn't take much for me to go back and watch
it was
again.
Made with
definitely
less than they think $15 million.
Yeah, is that great?
Yeah, I heard 11 awesome. Million bucks.
What does that show you? I mean, yeah. What does that tell you? It tells you, you know, Hollywood, these shitty movies, they're spending $200 million and this thing gets it done
right. But when you look at the revenues that it drew, it wasn't like it drew $1 billion like an Avengers or anything like that. Well, either,
yeah, because it's not in 1,000 theaters released.
Right, but we talked about that before too. What effect did it have such a good strong effect on us because we grew up in that era and it brought us back to a time? What was the broad effect that movie had? Is my curiosity to maybe somebody who didn't grow up watching Godzilla this was maybe the first time they saw it. Would it be like the clawed eggs that we have watched before? Is that what they would rate it kind of like a movie like that?
I saw on YouTube reviews, you know, people commenting on it, young kids, and they love it. And they didn't grow up on the you know, the 1954 Raymond Burr Godzilla. See, all the way.
I grew, my kids watched all the old Godzillas. We bought them on DVD. And my youngest, who's 19, watched every single Godzilla movie he could get his hands on. He loves Godzilla. It's his favorite monster. Mm-hmm. So when he heard this was coming out, he was one of the first ones in the theater to see it. So he loved it. He came home and he's like, I want to see this like 9 more times if I can.
How old is he? How old are we talking? What age group?
So when he saw his first Godzilla movie when he was like 5 or 6. And it was the Raymond Burr. Okay. Godzilla black and white. Mm-hmm. And he just loves mm-hmm. Godzilla. So
that episode is actually called Godzilla.
Gojira?
That's what that one's called. So yeah. Godzilla. Godzilla. Now, let me ask both of you this question. This was done with it was done in the Japanese language, but it had the subtitles. Did that bother you through this?
Not at all.
Through the movie.
I don't like subtitles, and we've been on record on this podcast saying that reading sucks, but
yes,
it's not bad. This isn't horrible.
Also, I think mm-hmm. if it's a good movie, to me, a good movie is you forget you have to work the next day, you know, that kind of thing. You're just totally into it. So mm-hmm. this, a good movie mm-hmm. with subtitles, you're just into it. You're almost telepathically, you know, sensing the movie.
Yeah.
So like a puck.
I still think it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny too when, and I don't speak Japanese, but when you see like two words in the subtitle, but when they're speaking, it's like they're going on for 30 seconds, but yeah. they're only saying two words like hello, Sue, or something to that effect, but it's much longer. And you're like, are they really saying that? Or are we just getting the short, dumbed down version because we're not smart enough?
The Americans is what they're doing.
I think they are. They're dumbing it down for us,
which I appreciate.
What are they really saying? You know, so. But it was well done, and I think I was starred for a good movie too, because I think the last movie I saw was Godzilla versus King Kong, and I'm not kidding you, and I could be wrong about that, but I've lost touch. So I was really excited to see this. And a lot of times when that happens, you get to a movie theater and you're like, oh, there's two movies I thought lived up to its billing. Godzilla and Maverick, where you went to them and you're like, oh yeah, that was worth the wait. That was very good. Godzilla was dead on. Now, again, I'm dumbed down because I'm the American dummy. What was the -1 for again? I lost track. What did that mean? Godzilla -1.
Mike or DJ Riz?
So I looked it up and I still don't get it, but it kind of is a... reference to the fact that the Japanese government gave up on the Japanese people after the bombings.
So it's lost in translation.
Yeah. Kinda.
Is it kind of a symbolic, you know how American films like to get woke and stuff like that? Is
exactly
that a shot
what
at
it? The director was making a reference to the fact that the government just kinda turned their back on everything but themselves after the war was over. Because okay. you can even kind of, those themes kind of are in the movie too, like especially with the people that at the end were trying to defeat Godzilla, where they say, we're kind of on our own on this one, so we just got to kind of have to do it.
Well, they were kind of pretending that if the Americans helped, that the tensions between the Soviets and Americans were so high that if the Americans helped, the Soviets would see that as an act of aggression. I'm like, yeah, right. We have film footage of this monster eating trains, and they're going to say, oh, they really shouldn't have been. I mean, there was plenty of film evidence that legitimately they could have gone in there and helped them. I thought that was kind of a lame attempt at them trying to handle it on their own. But
was
anyway,
that kind of a throwback to the old Godzillas, though? Like, that was the reasoning in the old Godzillas why they were kind of on their own. I'm not
I guess
really
I don't
sure,
remember.
But my guess, I'm trying to guess because the director purposely drew a lot of inspiration from the original Godzilla 54.
Oh, there's no doubt. You can
Jaws.
See it throughout the whole movie.
He said he drew inspiration from Jaws.
So, yeah, there is the Jaws scene.
I
like that, though.
Which really threw me off.
So. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of weird because it shows that mm-hmm. Godzilla can take damage.
Yeah. He's kind of the Wolverine of the monster universe.
Yeah, very good. He's the Wolverine. He has powerful healing factors.
Yes.
So what did you guys think of the actual design of Godzilla?
I loved it.
Now, he was a very, he had powerful legs. He didn't skip leg day.
No, yeah, his thighs were really massive.
Yes, he was a powerful, and his eyes look cool, I thought, because he looked kind of scary. He had these almost cat-like eyes.
Sure.
They were cool. What do you think, Johnny Ridge?
When he was kind of in the water and you could only see his eyes, he kind of reminded me of that thing from Neverending Story when they're flying. It kind of looked like this gentle little thing, you know, but it was almost kind of cute. Like you wanted to go up and rub Godzilla behind its ears. Like, oh, he's not that bad.
Monster
story. But the design of him, Godzilla's always been kind of bigger in his, in the thighs. That's always kind of a characteristic of him. I thought it was kind of a Jurassic Park type crossover between Godzilla, Jurassic Park. He had the huge toes, the claws type thing. That was, but you remember in the old Godzillas where he would actually like put up his dukes and start swinging a little bit, like he was kind of a part.
Well, that's where they had the sense of humor. Yeah, like he'd do the flying drop kick.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, he would slide on his tail.
Now, what did you think of the atomic breath? I thought that was awesome. When he powered up in his spine, the scales or whatever, just popping out, and he was just powering up, and it just basically nuked the whole city.
I could have done without the extra pop-up of those things.
You didn't like the color?
Pop-up. I didn't mind it, but I just like, you know, the color is where it's at, you know, when it turns blue. Like, yes. You know he's charging up.
What did you think, Johnny Ridge? You like the power-up scene?
Yeah, I mean, it added, the old version didn't have quite that detail of it. It was just kind of a fire-breathing type thing. But, yeah, for artistical theatrics, I thought it was kind of cool, you know, the way they portrayed that.
Now, what did you guys think of the characters? Because this movie, they actually build characters. Usually Godzilla, you know, it's just generic people running and screaming and getting stomped on. And then they always have to, you know, they threw in Raymond Burr or... Or these later ones, you know, they have actors, but they're just kind of generic. They're NPCs, you know. You don't really get into them. It's more about the monster. But this, they actually, you know, built the story with the little baby and the family. And what'd you guys think of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to jump in here first because I thought initially it was a little slow building up too much of that. I'm like, okay, I didn't want to see the starter family. But they're giving you the background of him and his demons and everything else like that. I thought if there's any criticism I have, it was that. I didn't see necessarily that being all that necessary for a Godzilla movie, but they did throw that in there, making it more Hollywood-esque, you know, a love story like they had to do in even Pearl Harbor, the American version of Pearl Harbor, when they redid that. They had the love story. You always have to throw the love into it, I guess, but... that would be my biggest criticism of that. I thought that was kind of slow and not. That's not what I wanted. I want monster. Let's go get the monster with the tank.
What do you think, Riker DJ Riz?
I was like Johnny Rage at first. I was like, why are we doing this? It's unnecessary. But then I got into it. I was like, I need to know when his war is over. And damn it, why didn't he just marry her?
Wow.
Yeah. It's like Jesus Christ. She's cute. Marry the woman.
She was easy on the eyes.
She was easy on the eyes, yeah. So,
well, even that one guy that he worked with said that to him out of the blue. Right. Why didn't you just marry her?
Yeah, the angry drunk.
And that kind of came out of, like, nowhere, too. It's like, what? What are you talking about?
You know, they always have a problem with the scale on Godzilla.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes he's really big and sometimes he's small.
Right.
But I had a problem with the scale on that little baby. Like, how old was that baby? Sometimes it was a toddler, sometimes it was a baby, and then the voice, like, they dubbed in this crying that sounded like a little infant. And
I think she did a great job with the crying. Those are her best scenes, the crying scenes. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, wasn't that weird, Johnny Rage? Didn't it throw you off the scale of that toddler?
The scale of the toddler.
I don't know. I kind of felt like she grew up as time went on. I mean, she wasn't, you know, it was kind of it's kind of like in a movie where they're trying to show you time. They'll show a Christmas tree or fireworks, like, oh, time is passing. And they were doing the same thing with her. She was a little bit bigger. She had been around longer. She was no longer a toddler. She'd now been part of his life for 2-3 years. It was just kind of showing years or
what if she got infected by the atomic virus and she became Godzilla? What do you think of that?
What if she became one of the singing women for Mothra?
Oh, wow. There you go.
What about that? That's some foreshadowing.
So we liked the music, huh? The soundtrack was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great.
Me and Johnny Rage on the way out were actually singing the song. Remember that?
Were you really?
We were.
We're humming the music, yes. It's true. It's not even a joke.
Was it the music from Never Ending Story?
Yes.
Nice.
No.
Yeah, it's I like the throwback to the old score. So
yeah.
Yeah, you know a movie has reached the pinnacle when you're humming the soundtrack as you're leaving the movie theater, holding hands, skipping together. That's just the joy it brought us. You know, I couldn't help myself.
This movie made with, you know, relatively not a lot of cash and everyone loves it. Is this going to be a wake up call to Hollywood, or is it just a pure money making machine and they're going to keep making these junk food, shitty movies? What do you think?
Yes. That.
Yeah.
It's not going to.
You don't think it is?
It's not going to change the way they make their movies one bit, because the junk food brings in more money actually.
Yeah, but you know, we were talking about that. They've got the episode Godzilla, and it's not Godzilla versus King Kong. It's Godzilla and King Kong. It looks absolutely
horrible. Not even King Kong. I think they can only just Kong.
Yeah, and watch. You should watch that trailer. Yeah. So I hadn't seen that trailer until after I saw Godzilla Minus One, which makes that trailer look even more horrible.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even want to watch that one right anymore.
No.
And I was kind of excited when Godzilla versus Kong came out. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of interested in seeing what the next one is. And now I've seen this one and freaking Kong is wearing a Thanos gauntlet. What the hell?
Ugh.
Yeah, it's going to be horrible.
I'm holding out hope that this is going to jumpstart, stimulate some young creative people and they're going to start making good movies.
Yeah,
because there's obviously an audience for it. I mean, people love this movie. They loved Maverick. You know, even the young kids are getting into it. So I think if you make a good movie, people are going to like it. So I'm holding out hope that better movies are going to be coming out.
I do wonder, though, if it's the timing of it all, too, because Maverick was, they held on to it for 2 years, and that was the first thing to come post-COVID, and there was nothing, and then all of a sudden Maverick, and I think, again, like Godzilla, it's been far and few between since there's been any movies that we've really made us want to talk about them. And so I wonder if Maverick, if that was released pre-COVID, if that would have done the numbers or had the excitement that it did post-COVID. I do think you almost need an asterisk by a movie now, post-COVID, pre-COVID. I thought Maverick was done very well, though. I mean, that's, again, it was more nostalgic. Guys like us who saw it back in the 80s. And it carried through for multiple people, too, because it did so well at the box office. You can't say that about Godzilla because the numbers aren't showing that. However, it was very popular to the ages of, like, your son, Rez. It's documented. He likes Godzilla, but that's far and few between with the younger people. And the numbers are showing it doesn't have really the mass appeal.
No, but I don't believe it. It's a Japanese movie. It wasn't made here. It wasn't released in mega 10 million movie theaters. So you can't go by the numbers.
I'd like to see the numbers of how many people saw it multiple times. Because that's happening a lot. Because you don't hear, like, even Mr. Rage said he wants to see it again. And...
Well, that would make it even worse of a flop, because now if 100 people saw it twice, that means 200 people saw it, but really it's only the same 100 people.
Yeah, but if it's a flop, it's a flop. No one's going to see it again. You know what I mean? Like, if you're that interested to see it again, because usually I don't see movies a second time in the theater. But
would you see this one?
Yeah, actually, I would. I'm debating whether or not to go tonight with the wife and her parents. So,
wife and her parents, they want to go to this one? That doesn't seem like a family.
It's not your traditional family, but father-in-law is big in these old nostalgia movies, so he's going to dig it. He's going to cry. He's an emotional guy. How close to tears were you guys in this
one? Well, Johnny Rage kept squeezing me, so I was ready to cry. Okay.
Yeah.
But how about smiles?
Oh, yeah, lots of smiles. This is the guy behind me was doing the...
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh. Like when Godzilla fell down, he's like, oh, it's like he was definitely cheering for Godzilla, but yeah, he was laughing at the little jokes, and he was getting into the action scenes.
What'd you think of the ships and naval stuff? That's cool.
It's no Greyhound starring Tom Cruise.
Oh, Greyhound. There you go.
But I think, actually, I like the special effects in this movie better because I'm not a huge fan of CGI.
I don't think anyone is, but yeah.
Yeah, and this relied on some CGI, but not like over-the-top CGI.
Yes.
So I think I enjoyed that a lot more. So, and the throwback to the mines, the sea mines, you know.
Yes.
Instead of the depth charges, that was pretty sweet.
That was cool. And I did like that Jaws scene. That was cool.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I liked a lot about this movie. There's not a lot to not like. If you watch it, you're going to love it.
Yeah. I mean, and you can pick apart any movie, but this was a good, as they say, popcorn movie.
Oh, yeah. An
enjoyable
absolutely.
Movie.
Yeah.
And like I said, when I see a movie and I forget I have to go to work, or you know, you can just totally get into it. Mm-hmm. You don't zone out.
Right.
Then you know it's a good movie.
Yeah. Now, I did read that the ending, you know, kind of leaves some things open ended, but the director said he just likes to do that because he.
Hey, Diggs, don't you have to actually have a job in order to forget
I'm
to
on
work?
Universal Basic Income.
Oh, nice. Very, yes. Very well.
Yes.
So,
you know, I'm all about AI. I want, yeah. Here's the thing. I want AI to take over. I want to just sit in my lazy boy and do nothing and just get a check.
With your UBI?
Yes.
Well, I thought well, you I know, already were doing that, you know?
Yes.
Okay. No. You're not far off the mark. No.
I'll just have like LG growing on my toes. I'm not going to move at all.
It looked like Stephen King.
Yeah, exactly. Creepshow. Meteor shit. Yeah. Yes, Creepshow.
I mean, how lazy has the world become? Lately, I've been taking it to the next level. I've been actually ordering groceries via the internet and then having them dumped off of my house because, heaven forbid, we step foot in a grocery store. But now it's like exhausting. It's like they ask you all these questions. Are you done? Did you want to proceed to the checkout? Would you like to tip? And you're like, all these steps.
And then don't forget to check the box and just leave it at your front door so you don't have to have contact with
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Is there any directions?
Are you like, afraid to answer the door? Do you have to wait? Are they gone? Are they gone?
I'm exhausted with the checkout process,
I usually wait till they're at the car so I can give them the generic wave. You know, like, hey, thanks. I'm not going to tip you any extra.
Speaking of that, what?
Well, the awkwardness of a tip is taken out of the mix because you do that just like Uber ahead of time, so you don't have to worry about that.
So what do you guys think of the screen that's popping up everywhere you go for a tip, leaving a tip?
I
hate them.
See,
I hate them.
I got to watch what I say here because my wife is dependent on tips.
Yeah, but what does she do?
She's a server and a bartender.
That's normally a tipped job.
Right. So, like, I'll tip a barista, even though, you know, because they're still serving me my coffee. But if you're, I don't know, what's a really good example of someone that just wants a tip? Like, if you're just taking my order?
Yes, at the counter.
At the counter, and you flip it over. Like, sometimes they'll flip it over, and they look at you like, okay, I'm going to watch you push that button.
Yeah, and how do you know how good of a job they're going to do?
Right, exactly. So I don't tip the normal 20% or 18%. I'll do like a 10 or 15% there.
All right.
But I'll still tip at a lower amount because all you did was push a couple buttons. You didn't serve it to me. You gave me a buzzer that's going to buzz in a little bit.
I go to this.
Yeah, that's a bone of contention with me, this whole tipping thing, because I have a friend that owned a bar, and I used to tell him, why do I have to subsidize your employees because you're too cheap to pay them? And here's the deal. If I go to any establishment, we'll just say Applebee's, for instance, and I buy a hamburger, and let's say the hamburger is $15, you're supposed to base a tip based on the dollar amount. Okay, so the hamburger is 10 or 15, so you give them a $3 tip. Well, let's say I order a steak, which is exactly the same size, exactly the same amount of work going from the kitchen to the table, but now because the steak is 45, now I have to tip them more. I don't buy that logic. What's it shouldn't be based on dollar amount, it should be based on work involved. I don't like subsidizing restaurants' employees, especially when they said they're all gonna get $15 an hour now, there's no need to tip. Well, they in Minneapolis are getting 15 and people are still tipping. I'm not saying you shouldn't tip, but the people that truly deserve, if I ever stay in a hotel I always leave a tip on the counter because those people are actually physically cleaning up after me. Okay. I always base it on the level of work put forth toward what I want to do. And it's the same thing when I get the grocery sent to me. The guy's coming here anyway. He's or a woman, and he's going to bring me 5 bags of groceries. It's $50. Just for sake of... Okay, well, let's just say it's $50. I'm using that. So because it's 5 bags, it's $50. You tip them 10%. It's $5. Well, if you do 6 bags and it's $60, do you give them $6? I don't think so. It shouldn't be based on dollar amount. It's work put forth to make my life easier. And I truly don't like tipping unless I feel there's a real, they deserve it. And people at Burger King, I don't like it when they just throw a generic. And it bugs the crap out of me, Diggs. When I go to the XL Energy Center and you purchase a beer, they won't take cash anymore. And then they flip the screen over and tip is in real big, bold letters. No, I'm not tipping you every single time I buy your $14 beer. It's not going to happen. So I don't care for that myself. I
go to this submarine sandwich joint. And when that comes up, the guy just says, just push the next button.
Yeah. I've been to a couple of those establishments.
That's kind
of
cool, isn't it?
Yeah. I went to a meadery recently. And
White Bear?
It may be that one. And they
tell us, yeah. Meadery. So
it's
we're
a meadery instead of a brewery.
Yeah, it's a meadery.
Yeah, they make mead.
Well, tell us about the mead.
It was delicious. If you get Odenberry's blood beard, it's a cherry. It's a tart cherry.
So they're sweet. They're all honey based. Is that how they make
it? Yeah, mead is basically honey wine. It's honey, water, and yeast, and then
gross
flavor to it. So, but yeah, so they do a tip thing too, but everybody who works there, they'll say, well, it'll give you there's a pop quiz at the end and you don't have to answer any of the questions. So, which is the tip part of it. So, which, you know, I like,
by the way, Diggs, for joining you guys today, I will kind of expect a tip of sorts.
No, turn away and show us the screen.
I hit the other button.
Custom amount. So yeah, but no, the meadery is great. You go in there and you looks like an old Viking tavern from like old Viking days. And then
is there dogs where I can just wipe my hands, my greasy hands on their coat?
No, but there's lots of fur benches.
Oh, I thought fur like retro chicks. All right.
No. All right. I'm sure that might be there too. Yeah. So.
I'm going back to the tip thing, but how about when you give the waitress a $100 bill and your bill's like $12?
Do you want change?
Are you going to be needing change for this? It's
like, no, I'm not made of money.
Go get a change!
That's great. They must just get trained to do that. Although one of the other new things, and we saw this in Puerto Rico, but now there's more establishments are doing it, especially in Minneapolis, where the servers will have the handheld devices.
Yes.
And they take the payment from you right there.
Yes.
And they
yeah, but a lot of them are doing that now.
My wife's always like, I hate that. I don't like them. It's like, well, it gets rid of all the dining and dashers though. Because they stand there and wait for you to dig out your check. Or not your check, but your card to pay now or your money. And then they just do it all right there. Mm-hmm. So I was like, but I bet dining and dashing is way down those establishments.
Now, Johnny Rage, are you a cash guy or are you a credit card guy?
Yeah, I'm cash guy.
How about you, Mike, or did you raise phone? Are you a phone guy? So I
was a cash guy up until the pandemic, and then when everybody started like, oh, we can't touch germy paper, and they started going more card and electronic, I've become more of a card guy, but now I'm paying a lot with my phone, too.
See, now I have a story about that, Rez. I was during the pandemic, I went to Punch Pizza. Okay. I get there. I only carry cash typically. And I'm a rarity. Most people don't, but I go there and the girl was disgusted that I had cash and how dare I even think about giving her cash because this is the middle of a pandemic. And thank God my daughter was there. So I had to turn to my daughter with her debit card. And she paid for our meal, whatever it was. I have $25 or something like that. Then we're pushed off to the side and you have to wait for your order. But there's this giant ice cream bucket with a word tip on it, tips. And there was all kinds of cash inside that ice cream bucket. And my daughter said, are we going to give the, I says, hell no. If they didn't want my cash to pay for this, then how dare they have this dirty rotten cash in their tip jar? And so it was just insanity is what that was.
Tip them crypto. Just tell them it's going to have some higher value later on in life. Give them like 100 Shiba Inu. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Less than 1/1000th of a penny right now.
Do you have any crypto, Johnny Rage?
Yeah, I'm not smart enough to figure that out, huh? Nope. I might end up giving him like this $1 million that I meant to give him like this
Here's
worthless
a Bitcoin,
thing.
That's not gonna catch on.
Do you have any gold or silver, Johnny Rage? Mm-hmm.
Does it count in my teeth? Yes. I have some silver fillings and stuff like that. Yes, I think I do. I've always, you know, it was a really bad day. I tried to melt my silver because I was just so low on cash. I tried to melt my fillings out of my teeth and then go to the silver guy. It was a commercial late night. I'm sorry. It was a weird time. so that's about, I have a beautiful collection of my teeth, Dave. That's where
I keep
it.
So do you keep a paper stash or what?
What do you mean a paper stash? Do I keep a stash of cash? I can't reveal that with all these thousands of people.
They're going to find out where you live and find out.
Yes.
Exactly.
So let's get back to the movie. What are we giving it out of five?
Five crushed train cars?
Yes, there you go. Thank you. Five crushed. Five crushed train cars. What are we giving it, Johnny Ridge?
Five. I thought it hit on all elements for me. It was nostalgic. It had the movie. It had the story behind it. It had the great visual effect. Godzilla came out right in front of us in broad daylight and looked really good. There was nothing bad about the monster where you're looking at it going like, wow, that's bad graphics or anything like that. And it was broad daylight. That's what I think really sticks out with me. They didn't hide him in the darkness and smoke. And it was a riveting plot, and the Navy was awesome, and they bombarded him, and it, to me, it was a five.
Biker DJ Rez, what are you giving it?
I am also giving it a five crushed train cars. Everything about it I loved. Good story, good effects, good acting, and the fact that it was in subtitles didn't even affect it at all. Everything about it I loved.
Sweet. I am also giving it five. Great movie. Soundtrack, great. Acting, great. Characters, fun characters. Homages to all the old Godzilla movies. They had it all, the sound effects. All that. They had
that was awesome. It was like he was here.
Yes, the atomic breath, all the tropes, stepping on the trains and eating people. And it was just a great movie.
So now if you live in Japan in January, you get an even extra cool bonus. You get Godzilla -1/-color.
Yes.
Which
black
is
and white.
Sweet. So I hope they I hope they release that version.
How do you think that would look, Johnny Ridge?
Oh, I think that would be pretty cool. I wish I would have done that here. That, cause you talk about throwback. I kind of liked I'd like to see that. Because that would really hit the mark in turn. I mean, it didn't ruin the movie, or I don't think it's going to make the movie better, but it would be kind of cool to see it.
The good thing is that movie did so well that it's in, you know, the ending scene, you know, there's going to be sequels.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't wait for him. I don't know, Kong and King Kong and all the who owns rights to what, but I would love to see that Godzilla go at it with King Kong.
Yeah. Mothra, King Ghidorah. Mm-hmm. Let's bring them all on.
Yes. The three-headed, three-headed?
That's King Ghidorah.
Yeah. My favorite.
Yep.
What is it? Monster Zero, I think that was the American version they called it.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, that monster with shooting the lightning and...
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think, I bet that black and white version becomes available for stream, but not the theater. That's my guess.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised because of the movie theaters, they're hurting for business. Right. So if they can get a copy of that, they're going to play it. Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I did see, I don't know how much time you want to go, but I did see, I've watched Tulsa King and I did see Napoleon, so I can talk on that if you would like me to.
Mike or DJ Rez, did you see Napoleon?
I have not.
All right, tell us about Napoleon.
Well, I'm big into history and I'm big into Joaquin Phoenix, so I thought what a great movie this will be because it hits on both topics. I know the name Napoleon, but I guess I didn't have a real in-depth knowledge of exactly what he was all about. I think everybody remembers Waterloo, the Battle of Waterloo. That movie, $135 million to create versus the 11 million at Godzilla, and Godzilla far exceeded my expectations to Napoleon. I thought that it was very slow. I thought that Joaquin Phoenix, who I absolutely adore, loved him in The Joker, loved him in Gladiator. He plays a dark-sided individual much better than a historical figure of Napoleon. They didn't need him to pull that movie off. In fact, I almost think he hurt the movie to a small extent. He didn't do it justice.
Let me ask you this. Let me jump in there. And who would you have cast as Napoleon?
I don't even know if you need a big name. I don't even know if you need a big star for that. You
could have got not about the man, even though the.
Yeah, I don't think you need a big name to tell the story. Napoleon is a big name enough. You don't really need a big name actor to play him to pull it off. And Joaquin Phoenix, I think because of his stardom, most people, they were banking on that, driving people to the theater. Once you got there, I think you would be disappointed. I myself was with his performance. He didn't bring it in any sense to me. And it seemed to be a mismatch to me on the theater. At the theater, they sped through his life pretty quickly, and it was some bits and pieces, but it was for me it was kind of a disappointment. Something that has been, I mean, they had been advertising that for quite some time. Every time I was flipping through Facebook, you'd see an ad, and again, it looked really, really good. And sometimes all you need to see is the trailer, and you've seen the whole movie, and that was kind of the extent where you saw the trailer.
How were the battle scenes?
Really cool. They did a really good job with that. I'm always amazed at how they fought wars back in those days where they just lined up against each other and just started bombarding musket ball. What a brutal way to fight a war when you've got cannons and then they unleash, they run toward each other and then they bayonet each other or the musket shots. And it's just
was there a lot of like intimate battle, or is it more just, you know, sweeping scenes of it, or did it feel like you were in there or more like you were watching it?
Well, that was more like I was watching it. I didn't really feel like it was on the battlefield with them. I was really hoping.
So there's no like blood spray on the camera, that kind of thing.
No, there wasn't. However, as he's marked in the opening scene, he does.
That's disappointing.
Yes.
We got that in Braveheart.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Braveheart.
Yeah. Yeah, Braveheart. No, you don't get into that. You don't get any of that in this, you know. But it was, and I wanted to see more of the strategic mind of Napoleon in this, because they claim he was such a great general. However, when you look at the statistics, he marched into Moscow with 600,000 people, I believe it was, and lost like 450,000 of them due to the cold temperatures, lack of food, starvation, battles. So he was actually exiled. Because of his missteps
over there, probably the cold weather.
What do you mean?
Battling, you know, like do their phones work and
in Moscow during that time? I bet it. Because
I mean, if I couldn't, you know, order Uber Eats,
and I'm on the battlefield. Yeah. Can you imagine, like Napoleon on X? He's like going on a little march. # Moscow invasion. That'd be sweet.
You know, jumping into that name change, though. I mean. Can we be a little more creative? Okay, we're going to change the name of Twitter. What do you guys want to come up with here? I got it. X. Let's call it X. That's a dumb name. What does that do for you, Diggs? Tell me about that new name change. Is that hip? Is that what
I
do you think?
I just want to let you know that I'm big on X. Huge. You guys got to follow us on X at Amazing Pop Pod. Powerful tweets. People love them, and I love you. Follow us on Twitter. So the name. Because now I'm big on X and Elon, we're like that. So I love the name X. Can't think of a better name than X. It's exciting. It's new.
We're not on a love boat.
Not yet.
Exciting and new. Climb aboard. We're expecting you. Anyway, so Napoleon.
What a horrible show, the love boat. God, we put up with that.
Oh, come on. I love the love boat.
Jason Voorhees' mom was on the love boat.
It's funny though.
Jason Voorhees' mom.
It's funny in crisis mode on the love boat. Whenever he needed to turn to some people, he would go to a bartender, a doctor, and the cruise director.
Gopher.
When there was Gopher. Yes, Ted Gant, Dandy, what's Grandy, Dandy, yes. Gandy, Dandy,
Iowa.
Governor of Iowa for a while, or Senator, well, Senator, Senator for Iowa. Yeah. There's not a person in the world that can't sing the theme song to the Love Boat, though.
Good point. Either that or Good Company, or not Good Life. Trees Company.
Facts of Life.
Yes, Facts of Life.
Back in the day when Alan Thicke was writing
banger
after banger.
Different Strokes is my favorite.
That's right, for different folks.
Yes. Rule the world. Johnny Rage, you got anything else for us?
Well, I think at some point in a future podcast, you should get like an assemble some theme show music. And then we, between me and Raz, we'll see who can name it quicker. You'll play like the Facts of Life. You know? You take the good, you take the bad, you take now you have now Facts of Life. I'll have like a little button and I'll button, you know, or you'll have to judge who said, got it. You know. So we'll truly find out who the
theme song king is.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying. Yeah. The king of the 70 sitcoms, we'll call it, or 80s, whatever.
So you got anything for us, Mike or DJ Rez, before we wrap this up?
I got nothing. I got nothing.
Powerful.
Yes.
Did you enjoy your time in the barn?
I did. I like what you did with the place.
Thank you. Yes, we're in a new barn.
Yeah, the Amish did great.
Yes.
Raising this barn.
Yeah, they raised it. Yep. They raised the roof. Powerful. We're always expanding. We're a very powerfully progressive podcast, and we're going to need you to subscribe. This podcast is available everywhere fine podcasts are found. Make sure you follow us on all the social medias, like we said. Follow Mike or DJ Rez, Mike Rez Radio. And until next time, you've just enjoyed the Amazing Pop Culture Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Amazing Pop Culture Podcast. The Amazing Pop Culture Podcast is available everywhere fine podcasts are found. Please leave a rating and review where you listen to podcasts. Like and follow the Amazing Pop Culture Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And shop our Amazing Pop Culture merch. This has been an Amazing Pop Culture Podcast production.